Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. Mariners win, thank goodness. Oh, my goodness. This would have been a really, really tough task for our guest who's joining us right out of the gate to talk us off the ledge, talking about our own personal ray of sunshine. He's phenomenal. John Morosi is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Bob and Dave. And remember what I said a couple weeks ago. Just don't get swept, right? Do not get swept. And as anxiety-producing as the last week or so has been, especially since the Suarez injury and now with J-Rod in and out, at least they did not get swept today. And who do we have to thank for that? Jared Kelnick himself. This is why the season lasts for 6 months. You have characters coming into and out of the play at various times, and today was the day for Jared Kelnick to put his stamp on this team.
Yeah, we'll get into Kelnick in a moment, but I'm just curious from your perspective what, you know, obviously it's a huge blow to be without Suarez, without Cal Raleigh for a bit. He's back now. Julio's been, he was out, came back, now he's out again. So obviously the big thump in your lineup is missing, yet that, you know, you had guys like Mitch Haniger and Ty France and Jesse Winker and Frazier, all these guys that are proven commodities, really struggling to score runs. I mean, in four or five games, they put up one run. And they dropped 3 of 4 to the Angels, 2 of 3 to the A's. How do you explain what's going on, or what are you seeing from your perspective?
I think it's the amount they've relied on Suarez and Rodriguez has really come into focus here. I think they got to be a special team when Suarez got hot. And since he's exited the lineup, they just haven't been the same. And you're right. It's been either feast or famine, it seems, the last week or so. And what this says to me, it's sort of a two-part question here. Number one, are they going to find a way, despite their weaknesses right now in the lineup, to get to October and get to the playoffs? If there, the answer is a resounding yes. I think by most calculations, their chances of making the playoffs are up above 95%. The mathematics is way in their favor. So that part I'm confident in. What I'm not sure about is the question that becomes absolutely essential in the month of October, which is this. Can you beat good pitching? And can you beat good pitching if Julio Rodriguez is out of the lineup and if Suarez is just sort of trying to catch up and do whatever he can to get back in the lineup? And the issue with Eugenio in particular is he is the definition of a streaky hitter. When he is going great. He had more home runs over the last month than Aaron Judge before he got hurt. He was that good. But when he is missing, he really misses. And so now you're going to ask him to come back right as the postseason begins and say, okay, go back and be the guy that you were when you got hurt. And that, I just think for that kind of a hitter, is a really difficult thing to ask him to do. And Julio, I saw a report after the game, going to get the MRI. It's a concern. There's no way around it. So I think the Mariners still find a way to get to the playoffs. But the thing that I've been saying for the last couple of weeks in light of the Mariners is, would it feel like the playoffs if they go on the road for the first weekend and lose? And so you never have that moment of the baselines at T-Mobile and the return of playoff baseball to Seattle. Would it feel real if they don't win that series and bring it back? And that, to me, is what I'm a little bit worried about right now. Can they get the first wild card spot that would mean that they get those games at home over the weekend? And if they can't, do I feel like they can win a series against Cleveland or Toronto more than likely to get that playoff feel back in Seattle with a questionable Rodriguez and a questionable Suarez? It certainly can happen, guys, but it's becoming, that part of it's becoming a taller task once you get there.
Hey, JP, this is a bad producing on my part. I didn't let you know that Dave's out today, so I'm here. You get a double dose of me. Hello, great to talk to you. So along those lines, if you're trying to track down that first wild card spot and the Blue Jays and the Rays are playing this four-game series this weekend, in your opinion, who do you think the Mariners have the better chance of catching? So who should Mariners fans be rooting for out of this weekend and then down the stretch?
I think you have to root for the Rays this weekend, because if Toronto wins that series, then they start to have basically a three-game lead on Seattle with a week to go, which the mathematics there gets almost impossible, honestly, from Seattle's perspective to get home field there. So I really believe the Mariners have to hope the Rays win this series and level things off a little bit entering the final week. And with Seattle playing games at home against non-contending teams, you have to like their chances. So I really think you see them go to Kansas City. That's the team they just fired Dayton Moore. That should be a series that you can win. If I'm the Mariners, I believe legitimately I should win every series for the rest of the season. That's how I see things setting up. And the Mariners can do that credibly, but the only way to really make headway is if Toronto stumbles. So they've got to start stumbling very soon to put things level. And then if you're the Mariners, you hope that your schedule with so many home games against non-contenders puts you back into a favorable spot, because it's going to be tough. There's no question about it. But I do see a path if the Rays can take care of business this weekend against Toronto.
Well, they're up on them 6-3 right now in the top of the third, so that's good news then. As far as Kelnick goes, what did you see out there? I mean, talk about a sigh of relief. You know, this lineup desperately needed just anybody to step up, and he gets his first crack at it after being called back up and goes, you know, looks like he was back in AAA. He'd been lighting it up in AAA. He goes 2-for-3 today with a home run, drives in two, works a nice walk, showed some patience. Anything look different physically, mechanically to you, or how do you come out of this in terms of the way you view Kelnick?
He looks more relaxed, more at ease. And again, it's just one look, and so I really don't want to extrapolate too much. But I think at first look, he's taking better at bats. He was I think showing a better knowledge of the strike zone, and maybe he has finally gotten it in his mind that he's not going to worry so much where the fielders are and be too pull conscious or opposite field conscious, just hit. And his athleticism and his hands are so good when he just lets them be. And I think for him, it's just been a matter of repetition. He's still a young guy. I think that we forget he's 23 years old. Had he gone to college, he would have been drafted, and this would have been like his second year of pro ball. So I think we have to remember where he's at still. And that he's still a very young player, and there's still plenty of time. I hope that he internalizes that message as well. And let's not forget, I thought it was very interesting at the way this lineup was constructed. He batted ahead of Jesse Winker today, and Winker was the DH. And we know that Winker's struggles on both sides of the ball have been well documented. At this point in time, you're here, you're around game 150. There is no room for sentimentality in game 150 when you're trying to make the playoffs for the first time in 20 years. And whoever starts in left field is going to be the hot hand. At this point in time, Jesse Winker, and he's been a pro about this and how he's handled it, no one's going to ever be able to say, well, you haven't given Winker enough chances. Yeah. He's had 5.5 months of chances, okay? Like, he's had a lot of chances. And so, and again, he's had some good moments, but the body of work has not been what the Mariners expected it was going to be. Clearly, nobody would say that. And so if Kelnick comes in and can play, you know, the other part of this is we don't know what the situation is with Julio. So all of a sudden, when you look at Winker's struggles and Julio's situation, if he's going for an MRI, that can't be good news on the face of it. Jared Kelnick might be playing 80% of the games for the rest of the season, for all we know at this point in time. That's why when you've got talented players, keep working with them and don't give up. And I think that's basically where they've been with Kelnick. Let him come around, let him realize how young and talented he still is, and then let's just see what happens at the end of September. So I think the organization's done a really good job. You have to credit the AAA staff in Tacoma for keeping his focus there, because that was a focus day for him. And I think, you know, Dylan Moore had a really good game as well. You know, the Haggerty has been so valuable. But you might see some games where it's Haggerty and left and Kelnick in center, like it was at the end of the game today. I mean, this is now an absolute what have you done for me lately production based business. And I think Kelnick's going to get a chance to play this weekend in Kansas City. and I'm going to be watching his at-bats, maybe not as closely as Aaron Judge's at-bats or Pujols' at-bats, but I'm going to watch Kelnick's at-bats closely, because if he catches fire, guys, we know he's got the ability. And so if the present production lines up with the hit tool and the talent, he's going to be there. He's going to be playing in game one of the playoffs, potentially, for the Seattle Mariners.
Well, and at this point, JP, I would say even if he slumps, let's just say he gets back to where he's struggling at the plate. The one thing that I found really, really positive his first time through was he was playing a really good right field. He wasn't hitting, and he was really struggling, yeah, but he didn't take it into the field with him. At this point, Jesse Winker's not hitting, and he's terrible in the outfield. So I don't really – and he's a lefty just like Kelnick. I would rather see Kelnick out there not hitting than Winker out there not hitting.
No, that's a very fair point. And I think, too, you look at the way the Mariners' bench will look, and this is kind of where it's so interesting, obviously not having the full 40-man roster active in September now with the unique rules. I think that, for me – Scott Service is going to have to make a decision here about who's on the mound and what gives us the best chance to win defensively. Do you play, you know, at some point in time, to your point on Kelnick, if Julio's not available for a while, and if you feel like Kelnick's your best option in center field, he's part of the team all the time. You know, if that's the case, you know, they've obviously got Derek Hill in the organization, hasn't played a lot, obviously. He's one of the better center fielders in the game, but just doesn't really bring a lot offensively. At some point, I think what we're going to start seeing, Bob, is they're going to pair up when they've got a more of a fly ball pitcher on the mound. Maybe you see your best defensive outfield. If it's a ground ball guy or maybe a strikeout guy, you can take a little bit more of a chance and put your best bats out there. But when you're scoring one run a game, you kind of have to go with the hot hand offensively. And I think when your offense has struggled this much and you see somebody pop in like Kelnick and play like this, he's probably bought himself a weekend of starts at this point, because they're just desperate to get somebody in there who can play. And I think Kelnick right now offensively showed them a lot here tonight.
Hey, John, speaking of pitching, you have talked with us a few times about how much credit the Mariners staff should get, and the pitchers as well, for staying healthy all year, how difficult that is. And we've seen a career high in innings from Logan Gilbert. We're seeing a career high in innings from George Kirby. Today, though, George Kirby goes out and has his toughest outing as a Mariner, just 2 1/3 innings, gives up 5 runs. Is there any concern that now that wall might be getting close, that innings limit might be catching up to him, or is it just a blip here for George?
I'm a little bit, I don't know if I would say worried, but I would say mindful and cognizant of where he's at with his innings. To me, I remember I covered somebody who's going to the Hall of Fame and Justin Verlander, and as they got to the end of his first year, there were some moments where he looked really tired. He had never done that before. And Kirby has never done this before. And when you're in that kind of a situation, I think it's imperative that you take some care there and trim off innings here and there whenever you can. And look at the game tonight. We've talked about this guy before, but this is where Matthew Boyd is really important. He's the bridge. In a game that's a little bit helter-skelter, he settles it down and gets the win with 2 scoreless innings in the middle of the game. And that's where I think Kirby, and by the way, this is not unique to George Kirby or the Mariners. Mm-hmm. You know, I've covered the Dodgers in the World Series, where they had guys like Walker Buehler and Dustin May and Tony Gonsolin, some pretty good names, going 2, 3, 4 innings. It's a different game in October. It is tournament baseball. And so when I look at this game today, Kirby and then Boyd, the job of the starter, the way that it's managed now, and I'm sure Scott Service will probably subscribe to some formulation of this theory, the job of the starter in the playoffs in a modern game is not to go 7 shutout innings. You would love it if he did, but it's almost like every game is game 7. Get the ball to the bullpen with the game still winnable. That is your job. It's like a relay race. Go as long as you can with quality and then hand it over. And you have a guy that you trust to get out of a jam at different stages of the game, and then you try to have a guy like Boyd start a clean inning. And that is what I believe we're going to see this team do. It's a relay race. And so I think Kirby, you're right, he's been awesome all season long. He belongs somewhere in the Rookie of the Year conversation. He's not going to win it because Julio is. But you look at what he has done. The request from him going forward is now going to be, George, give us your four best innings today. Because we've got Boyd, we've got the whole crew, Seawald, everybody's rested and ready to go. Just give us your best four. And I think you're going to see a more focused outing from him once they give him the rest that he needs. Because, you know, they also had that doubleheader the last week of the season against the Tigers. There's going to have to be some bullpen days just to buy them some time and make sure that by the time you show up to that first-round series, that Kirby and everybody else is ready to roll. And remember, you only have to have three starters there. You can piggyback guys, but I'm telling you, Boyd's on that team because of what he did today. He's somebody that you trust to have a slow heartbeat in a big spot, and I think you might see as great as the young starters have been. I think probably we've talked about this before. You know, who is not going to start a game in that best of three series, and do they make the roster as a long reliever? That's the question that you've got to ask. And I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how the Mariners manage things down the stretch. How much do you chase? If you're two or three games out of the first wild card as you enter the last five games of the season, do you still pursue that? Or do you say, you know what, we're going to concede that we're going to begin the season on the road and sort of pump the brakes a little bit, and Logan Gilbert, you get two innings, and Kirby, you get two innings, and we're just going to make sure that you guys stay sharp and make sure that you're ready to go on that Friday and not be so worried about what your seed is in the dance. I think that to me, because of the new playoff format, guys, is going to be one of the most fun and second-guessable decisions that people like Scott Servais and Kevin Cash and John Schneider in Toronto are going to make, because obviously only one of those three is going to be able to get that top wild card spot, and how the other two teams respond is going to be fascinating and deliciously second-guessable here in the days ahead.
Deliciously second-guessable. I like it. I like
it.
There
you go.
Hey, John, when a team is struggling offensively the way the Mariners have as of late, you know, we're out here, I'm up on the air saying, man, I don't know how you fix it, but you better get it figured out. That's a very simplistic thing to say, because it's, you know, I don't know. I think it's probably unique to each hitter who's struggling, what's going on, if somebody's mechanically off, if they're mentally off, if they're physically dealing with something. So I don't think it's, you know, there's not a true story for each one. Everybody's got their own story. But who do you put it on? Is it up to Scott? Is it up to the hitting coach, the player himself, the three of them getting together? How do you remedy when you've got sort of a collective not coming through?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think that a couple things. I think with this team, and this is common of many teams this time of year, I think this team is banged up. And it's not just the guys that are out of the lineup. You know, Riley has been banged up, and then he came back in the lineup today. That first and foremost, I want to credit him for playing through it, because he's not 100%. I'm not sure Ty France has had a pain-free day since May. And he's out there today playing third base. So, I mean, you've got guys that are taking team at-bats where they know, and baseball is so unique this way. And it's true of other sports too, but baseball in particular, if you're a really important guy defensively, or if you just give a different kind of at-bat, but you're not healthy and you're probably going to go 0-for-4, maybe you're going to go 0-for-3 and draw a walk because your hand hurts and you can't swing, I think there's some element of that happening right now with this team. And you've got guys just grinding it out. And that's why just keeping the schedule going without getting swept is sort of the idea here. And then resting guys when you can. I think that's where, you know, this team is probably not ideally constructed in terms of the health of some of the bench pieces, the way that I think they don't have. If you look at like the Mets right now, look at the Braves. These teams have really deep benches. The Dodgers, the Mariners have a good team, but they're not especially deep with really good offensive options when you're not hitting or when a guy's banged up. And that's just where they're at right now. They're a good team, but they're not a great team yet. They may become one in the future years. They're a good team. And I think when you have guys that are out, it just kind of exposes a little bit of that depth. That being said, they've got guys. I think Dylan Moore's had a phenomenal year for them. Haggerty's had a phenomenal year for them. But when you start having to play them every single day and say, hey, guys, we got to find a way to score five runs today, it's just, I think, collectively asking a bit much of this group, which I think has answered the bell in a really brilliant way all season long. So I think we have to be realistic about our expectations, candidly, for the way this lineup can function when their key stars are out. But I think the remedy often – how are you going to manage a slump? Are you going to hit your way out of it and take extra BP? I think a lot of these guys are showing up saying, man, like, I got like 9 things wrong with me right now. I don't know that I really feel like I can take a bunch of extra swings to get out of this. And I think they look at times a little bit tired. And I think that's just a function of the schedule and how Scott has had to play them. But the bonus is that they're going to be in the playoffs. And I think that now for Scott, I think it's going to be that delicate dance of how hard do you push these guys to grind their way out of these slumps? Or do you just say, you know what, it's September. We know how to hit. We just got to get our bodies right and resting guys. I think that's going to be the big question. But again, that's where Kelnick, that's where, you know, he yes, he's played a bunch and he's kind of a high effort guy, but he should walk in that clubhouse and everybody should say, listen, hey, fresh dude, you're playing every day now. Like, come on in, man, like, grab an oar, let's go. And I think that's, and I hope, and I think based on what I know of Jared, that he's going to welcome that. But that he's like all of a sudden, like the fresh guy has come in. He's the guy with like the clean jersey in the third quarter of like an absolute mud fest football game. He's got the clean jersey. Okay, you're going to carry the ball for a while. I think that's kind of the idea. They need him to carry the ball for a while.
Okay, John, before we let you go here, a question maybe of preference for you. You mentioned you're on Aaron Judge watch. Bob and I have talked about the home run record, and I know, Bob, you're of the opinion that there are some asterisks around Barry Bonds, McGuire, Sosa, and technically they are listed as having the most home runs in a season. I think the Hall of Fame has shown those voters don't necessarily consider that. In your opinion, if Judge gets to 62, in baseball circles, will he kind of be unofficially referred to as the new single-season home run leader?
I think he will. I think he'll be viewed as the authentic single-season home run leader, to borrow a phrase that my friend and colleague Bob Costas uses a lot when we talk about this exact issue. I think it's the authenticity of it. And Judge has earned the authenticity by the way that he's carried himself and competed. So I think that that's how I would look at it, that he deserves to have that authentic status. And I think people in the game view it that way. You look at, I think, something that's really important to me as someone who loves the history of the game is the fact that the Maris family is there in New York right now. Like that to me says that they are in a way sort of giving a certain imprimatur of their support for what he's doing. And that matters to me. That is, as someone that certainly we watched the Maris family show up for McGuire years ago, and then certainly the disillusionment that followed. For them to come back, I think, just shows the faith they have in Aaron, the belief they have in his character, the belief certainly I have in his character as well, and a lot of people around the game do. So I think this is a for them perhaps a moment of joy and celebration, and maybe closure, maybe a happier ending to the story of their father's record. It's a really emotional and complicated time, I think. And you're right, there is a distinction that some people will go with and some won't. For me, I would look at Judge as the authentic home run king in Major League Baseball, and indisputably the American League and Yankees all-time leader, which is certainly something that means a whole lot in this game. So it's going to be a lot of fun between him and Albert. A lot of at-bats that the whole country is going to be hanging on for the next 10 days or so, which is just great for the game.
Yeah, I'm absolutely in his corner. I know it's, for some, it's blasphemy to root for a Yankee, but I am rooting for Aaron Judge for that very reason, that I would then view him as the legitimate, clean, I'm assuming, home run king for a season in either league. Because, I mean, come on. Barry Bonds never hit 50 home runs, and then in his late 30s hit 73. I mean, it's nonsense. So, yeah, it would be Aaron Judge, and I'm pulling for him. John, we appreciate you. It's always a great conversation every week. We look forward to next week.
All the best, guys. Enjoy the daily excitement. Occasionally, the agony of the playoffs and the pennant race. But I'm telling you, it's the best kind of sleepless nights you ever have is following a team like this. So enjoy it and relish it. Embrace it. It could be a lot of fun.
We'll talk to you next week, John. Thanks so much.
All the best, guys. You bet. Take care.
Thanks
so much.
JP.
You
too.
There you go. John Morosi. Our weekly conversation with our MLB insider, John Morosi, is presented by Stanford's Restaurants. All right. And if you missed any of that conversation, it will be available on the podcast page after the show. SeattleSports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. And it'll be right there waiting for you. Click subscribe, as Thumb and Wyman tell you each and every time. Then you never have to worry about it again. Meanwhile, Clint Hurt doesn't hold back in expressing his frustration with the Seahawks' defensive struggles. We'll break down his comments coming up. It's Wyman and Bob with Lefko in for Wyman. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Seahawks get set for their matchup with the Atlanta Falcons coming up this weekend, and there is much to address on both sides of the ball with this team. There are holes, there is inconsistency. It's only two games, but you're seeing youth, you're seeing rookie mistakes, you're seeing some things that are just basics, especially on the defensive side of the ball, tackling. It's just a very basic fundamental aspect of the game. It's not a scheme-oriented thing. It's a fundamental thing that you learn really, really early. We've talked about it to death with Dave and Clint Hurt, talking about they've changed some things in practice to fix the issues of tackling.
You know, you want to keep down explosives, and if you keep explosives down, you also keep down points. So tackling is a huge issue, and it's frustrating for myself and obviously all of us, players included, because it's not like it's something that goes ignored. We work on that all the time. And even have added phases into practice, so we continue to work on it. And the guys are tracking and doing the right things in practice. But right now, we're playing fast in the game and playing aggressive and throwing our body, but we're not wrapping up. We're leaving our feet too much. And these are all the things that players know we've talked about that has to get fixed.
He's right. It's got to get fixed. If you get beat because somebody is more athletic or they've executed better, that's one thing. If you've got a guy right there in your sights, and you, or maybe you're somebody that goes for the hit, which you see so often these days, somebody dropping the shoulder, trying to lay the hit on the guy rather than wrapping him up, that's on you. It's your technique. It's a very basic, fundamental part of what you do that you can control. You might not be able to control, you know, somebody who lays a good block on you that you don't see, or somebody that just out-athletes you, if you will. But if you've got them and you've got your hands on them and you're not wrapping up, that's you.
By the way, I appreciate Clint Hurt. I like listening to him. I remember when he was on with you and Dave right after he got promoted to this position, and he breaks down things extremely well. He's candid, doesn't make any excuses there. And in listening to his full press conference yesterday, I was cutting up all these cuts here. It makes sense when he says these things. He's not hiding behind any issues. So good to hear that. Now, yes, there are significant issues. And I kind of wonder, after hearing that and after seeing the Seahawks struggle in these first couple of games, how much the way they go about training camp maybe hurts them early on. Now, it might keep them healthy, but you and Dave were remarking after watching Hard Knocks how the Lions practice compared to how the Seahawks practice.
Yeah.
So if they're not doing any tackling in practice, and if the Seahawks are barely hitting each other, that's what's reflected in these games, especially now with the preseason where starters are barely playing, first teamers are barely playing. Hopefully that is a fixable issue by just reps, because right now they certainly are not limiting those explosive plays. I think Clint Hurt went on to talk about how costly that one run was for Deebo Samuel, because you have him in the backfield, he slips free.
Yeah, it was that Darrell Taylor,
I think. And then, yep. 51 yards later, he kind of changes the game on that one run. Not the game, but he kind of changes the field, and then they score after that. So that play in particular looms big, and I can only imagine that more concerted effort on tackling, which seems very basic to say, but something the Seahawks don't usually do in these early practices, have to help them.
Yeah, it's the other team's going to do a lot to beat you. Don't give them more. Don't help them beat you. Right? They might beat you anyway, even when you make your plays, when you are fundamentally sound. But you do things like that, and you just hit on it. 51 yards later, there's the team down the field. Your defense is on the field way too long when you had a chance to stop somebody in the backfield, and now it's a fresh set of downs and they're in the red zone. And there's just such a trickle down to a poor play like that. It can be incredibly damaging, as we saw. So, I mean, control what you can control, and tackling you can control. So I'm glad to hear that, it's obviously not gone unnoticed there. And he talked about the issues not being due to the 3-4, some speculating the switch in the defense is somehow problematic for tackling now, but he addresses that.
It's not a lot of this stuff. When people keep talking about the 3-4 to 4-3 stuff is like way overblown. Because even when you play a 4-3 defense, most teams in this league run an under front. A majority of the time when you watch the film and you look at us, we're in under front structures, meaning, a 9 technique outside backer, a 5 and a shade to a tight inside. So whether you're playing 4-3 or 3-4, that's usually the predominant front in the NFL. So a lot of it gets made way too much of. But whatever front structure you play, your big guys got to put hands on blockers to give the guys on the second level a chance to be able to go and play football.
So, yeah, the big guys up front, they're going to occupy bodies. They're going to take that attention. Your linebackers come up and make the tackles, presumably. And that's not what's been happening.
See, do you think we would have heard that in the past? I'm not sure every coordinator comes out and directly, not necessarily
with
calls out their guys. But, I appreciate that he actually outlined the issue there. I think that's very insightful for not just media trying to ask the questions or people trying to make observations about it. But fans can maybe take away from the fact that, okay, look, this is the definitive issue here. The defensive coordinator has outlined it, and here's what they're doing to fix it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just for clarity's sake.
Yeah. I don't recall how specific Ken Norton would get because, boy.
Or not just Norton. Maybe I don't think that's standard around the league. You hear coach speak a lot of the time. It's kind of refreshing to hear.
Yeah. No, right now he's direct and to the point. And it's, again, he's addressing such a basic element of the defense. It's not, hey, guys are out of position. Guys are hitting the wrong gaps. Guys aren't cutting off the edge, turning the play back in. And then there's a lot of that going on as well. But when you're looking at problems with the most basic element, that's got to be maddening. Because as a fan, it's maddening. That every fan can see that. Often a fan won't notice that so-and-so was in the wrong gap. Or, that the communication wasn't there. You're trying to figure out, well, who messed that up? That's not as obvious. You see Daryl Taylor with his arms around a guy's legs and he doesn't bring him down. That becomes a very obvious moment. And for the coaches in there looking at that film, I can only imagine what is being said. And the result of the play is even more damning. So it's easily fixable. It's easily fixable. This is not like last season where we kept hearing, it's just communication. We just got to communicate. Like, all right, well, what the hell does that mean? Right. Because, yeah, week one, two, maybe three, I get that. We're hearing that in week 10. Week 11. You can't hear that. That can't be the excuse. So this needs to, at least that part of the defense can and should be wrecked. Doesn't mean nobody will ever miss a tackle again, but that part can be fixed because that's just about focus and concentration and technique as opposed to execution and, oh, I was in the wrong spot. I turned my head. I didn't see the whatever. You can control this, and I would imagine we're going to see a much better version of it this weekend.
And that's why I'm a little more encouraged for exactly what you're saying, that it's not 10 weeks into the season. It's not guys either trying to cover up and protect their old defensive coordinator or just simply truly not knowing what's going on. It is just still a very new core all the way around. I mean, you have a new defensive coordinator. You have a couple new coaches back there in Sean Desai and Carl Scott. You also have new players, essentially, in all these roles. I mean, think about Jordan Brooks. He's calling plays for the first time. He has the green dot for the first time. Bobby Wagner did that for so long and so well mm-hmm. that this is a whole new experience, even though it's the same position. And now Cody Barton's in there playing significant minutes at linebacker for the first time. So you have all of that. It is still a new growing process. And I understand that some of the same frustration creeps in when you see, okay, well, here we go. The defense again, not holding up its end of the bargain for year after year after year, it seems like, over these last few years. But trying to distill the fact that this does seem different. And if it continues for a couple more weeks, yes, be concerned because the Falcons are a good running team. They'll want to run the football, as Wes Durham told you guys yesterday. But with more time and more game reps, it seems like this core can figure it out and become a strength of this team.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see just league-wide how different the approach to next preseason is going to be. Mm-hmm. Because we had that number the first week, what was it? The quarterback teams whose quarterbacks or starters didn't play were 3-8, something like that. Remember that first week stat? Like, there was just a lot of bad football in week one.
Yeah.
And, Aaron Rodgers to Russell Wilson to whoever you want to talk about, or whole teams just looked off. I wonder if that'll change and if the Seahawks might be a group that looks at it differently, going, okay, that didn't pay off. Yeah, guys stayed healthy for the most part, but we didn't come out of the gates hot by any stretch. And maybe it wouldn't have made a huge difference with, rookies and uncertainty at positions. You would still be struggling to find your footing. But I'd like to see if practices are treated differently. Maybe they still don't play guys in preseason games, starters, if you will, but maybe the practices get a little bit more physical. Maybe they do tackle to the ground like we were watching in Hard Knocks.
I think, yeah, once you see, okay, three preseason games, that's a little different. We have more time now between the end of preseason and the start of the season. Maybe it's in that period you start to ramp it up a little bit more.
Hey, a reminder, Hawks Live is back for another season, and you can join hosts Michael Bumpus and Paul Moyer tonight starting at 7 p.m. at Bellevue Square Center Court for a live broadcast and a preview of this week's game and a visit by Seahawks player Tariq Woolen. That'll be in person there live tonight at 7 o'clock at Bellevue Square Center Court. You can learn more at seattlesports.com/events. All right. Will we see Jesse Winker in the field again? Or Could a pure DH role help fix his struggles? We'll get into that next. It's Wyman and Bob with Lefko in today. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Mariners get the big win today. They come from behind. Game they were out to a 3-0 lead in. Got behind. Figured it out. A rare off day for George Kirby. I'm not going to rip George Kirby at all. First game this season, he's walked more than one hitter.
Well, you know, I have to wonder, too, especially for a young pitcher. We know how routine-oriented starting pitchers are.
Mm-hmm.
That top of the first inning, I mean, it was great. Yeah, he put up three runs. It took a long time. That's, you know, 40 extra minutes almost that George Kirby is sitting around, maybe gets a little cold, and it just, from the start, didn't look like he had it, so maybe you put it on that, but you're right. I'm not worried moving forward.
He's been way too good. His ERA before this game, 2.98 for the season. This is a rookie.
You knew something was wrong when he walked a second batter.
Yeah.
That's how you knew it was going to be uncharacteristic.
How amazing is that? I mean, seriously, I've been blown away by this and been leaning on it, and maybe people are tired of hearing about it. But the fact that a rookie came into this game with 15 walks in, what was it? I think 114 and two-thirds, whatever it was. 15 walks. A rookie. He's just, the guy's been spectacular. Didn't have it today for whatever the reasons were, but he's been amazing. Hopefully it's just a blip. Like Robbie Ray's had a dud, you know, Logan's had a dud, Marco's had a dud, Luis the other night. So it happens. Mm-hmm. He's been so consistent. I think we almost take him for granted, which says a lot again for a guy who's in his first season. Meanwhile, a guy that has quickly fallen out of favor with the fan base. At one point, when he first got here, he talked about it being the electric factory out there in the stadium, and everybody embraced his personality, and he was the core of that trade with the Cincinnati Reds. But it has just not been a good year for Jesse Winker across the board. He's been great at walking. He walks a lot, but as we've talked about before, that doesn't serve you that well. He's not a stolen base threat. He's not fast at all. So if he's not being driven in, he's just sitting there.
Yeah, I think so. The play last night was the tipping point.
Well, it was. I mean, he made this error. We've known he's not a good outfielder. He's just not. He doesn't have range. He's really slow. He doesn't seem to pick the ball up very well. Like some of the routes he takes, it doesn't look good. And it cost him last night, that error. And Scott Servais, after the game talking about it, said, yeah, that's a play that you absolutely have to make.
You know, it's not a difficult play. You know, the ball's off the wall, catch it, get it in. I wasn't able to do that. You know, it's something that, you know, we'll continue to look at. Jesse's played in the league a long time. It has been a struggle for him recently. Where we're at in the season and, you know, we have made defensive replacements late in games and we do have a lead. We didn't do it. It was a 0-0 game there late. And you know, it's a play that typically should be made.
Yeah. Should be made, and he botched it, and it cost him. And then we saw today that they had Kelnick out there initially with Julio before Julio's back started seizing up on him. So then they put Haggerty out there and put Kelnick in center. And I was saying to you and to John Morosi on the air and you off the air that even if Kelnick reverts back, let's just pretend somebody's going, well, he hit that guy today because he knew him so well from AAA. All right, we'll find out. And if that becomes true, he's up there struggling again, I would still run him out there every single day, not hitting, over a not hitting Jesse Winker, who's not a good defensive player. You got to give me something. Kelnick can give you something in the field. He did it before. We saw him really scuffle at the plate, and he was giving you really good defense in right field. You're not getting anything from Winker other than the walk, and with the whole lineup struggling, nobody was driving him in. So he's just kind of sitting there. He's not a stolen base threat. He's not going to be moving. He's not going to be advancing station to station unless somebody's doing it with a hit or a walk behind him.
Yeah, we're seeing how valuable run preservation is. Everything's magnified now. And that mistake from last night is so glaringly large because it did lead to the A's taking the lead. And then because it was a low scoring game, that looms as a decisive run allowed. So in a playoff type setting, when one play can be magnified and make all the difference, or down the stretch here where you're essentially playing playoff type games because you have to clinch, you have to win these games. You're right. A defensive oriented outfield, even if you give something up at the plate, which you're probably not giving up much of the plate. But right now, assuming Julio's out maybe one or two games, we don't know exactly what's going on with his back. He had to leave the game defensively right when he went out there. Went out for the first inning, had to leave in that first inning. So I think a defensive alignment of Haggerty, Kelnick, Haniger, probably your best bet right now.
Yeah, or you could put Dylan Moore out there. I don't care. Put there basically anybody. If Tremel were still on the roster or up with the big club, he's down with AAA Tacoma, I'd put him out there. I mean, he's your least appealing defensive option in the outfield. But if he were hitting, I would say, well, you got to figure out what he's got to be in the lineup, whether it's a DH or you might have to just live with him in the outfield if you want Santana to DH, something like that. Then I get it. But if you're not getting anything from him offensively, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever, barring lack of bodies, to put him in the outfield. It's beyond ill-advised.
Do you think the leeway has run out offensively? Because right now, in this current situation, the Mariners, yeah, they put up 9 runs today, but with these injuries and with everyone playing through a little bit of pain, Cal Raleigh grunting it out, and he's just fighting through that thumb injury. It's got to be extremely painful. So you have Raleigh injured, Julio now with the back issue again.
I think Suarez Mitch and Ty might still be
Mitch
dinged
and
up.
Ty still dinged up. So you might just simply need a bat that you're just hoping that Winker, with all his past history, can provide.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you lean on the fact that he's done it before. He was an all-star last year, hit over 324 home runs driven in. He's got it on pay. It's on the resume. It can be done. Is he going to get it done this year? You're running out of games in the regular season to develop that confidence. If I'm Scott Servais, I need to see something that tells me, okay, I feel like this guy's about to turn the corner. I feel like it's worth the risk to put him in the lineup or put him in left field if that's what you feel like you got to do. But that to me, I'd have to be out of options at that point because these games just mean too much. You can't afford to play like that. You just can't have it. Jerry DePoto on with Brock and Salk talking about just overall how things haven't been clicking for Winker this season.
It's just not been a great year for Wink. And I wish I could tell you why. He's got an outstanding skill set that's been proven over time. You know, he hits, he has some power, he gets on base at an incredibly high clip. He's one of the more discerning hitters in the league. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't clicked for him.
And that part would be great if the rest of the lineup were clicking and, hey, he's not getting on base with hits, but he's walking and the guys behind him are driving him in. And you look at his runs scored to, hey, he's scoring a lot of runs because he's always on base. But that's not the case. Unfortunately, when he's not hitting, the rest of the team hasn't been hitting. So you can't throw the liability of his defense on top of his not hitting. At that point, you're getting nothing from him other than negative. It's negative. You can live with an offer, but if he's costing you in the outfield, you can't have it.
Yeah.
It's unsustainable.
Yeah, not sustainable, Bob.
It's not sustainable. Can't happen. So we'll see how they move forward with this. But today he was DH. He was not in the field. And you could see it on Scott's face. I don't know if you watched the postgame show yesterday. He looked really annoyed in talking about that.
I was going to say, that's the closest I think you'll ever hear Scott Servais coming to directly calling out a guy.
Yeah. I mean, he's like,
he called him out.
That's a routine play. You got to make that
in
play.
A politish way.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll continue to look at it, but just the look on his face, he's like, good. I'm glad. He looks mad. He should be mad. All right. We're going to get the latest on everything going on in baseball and with this Mariner team perspective from John Morosi of MLB Network. He's going to join us next here with Wyman and Bob. Lefko in for Wyman today. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.